I'd like to welcome everyone to One Mom to Another. My name is Cindy Anderson, author of the book One Mom to Another. And today I am so excited. I have Julie Wagner, who is writer, artist, and musician, here with me today. And Julie and I are friends. And so I'm going to give you the official bio, but it's going to be a little bit more casual because we have known each other for a few years. But when I was writing your introduction, Julia, I thought of in Pride and Prejudice, where they're talking about an accomplished woman. and I just thought, that is Julia. She is an accomplished woman. She writes, she is an artist, she is a musician, and there's so many talents that you so freely share with others. And I really love that. But anyway, I'll get back to the official bio. I digress. Julia has published in The Ensign, is a co-organizer of a writer's retreat in Western Pennsylvania, and has presented at the Northwest Writer's Retreat. Julia, as I mentioned, paints beautiful watercolors, as well as runs an Etsy called Wooden Playtime. Get that right? Okay. Selling hand-painted wooden chess pieces. In addition, she is an accomplished pianist and French horn player. What I hold the most dear is that Julia is my friend. We have spent the last few years together in a writer's critique group where we read each other's stories, laugh a lot, and shed some tears. On April 7th, 2012, Julia's daughter, Lizzie, passed away. She was 2 weeks away from her 13th birthday and the oldest of six children. When asked about the challenges of moving through grief individually and as a family, Julia said, "As I help my remaining five children navigate through grief, we have learned to dig deep for courage, to laugh through the tears, and that we don't always have to be brave." Julia's latest manuscript, being submitted to publishers and agents, Toenails and Teardrops, is loosely based on her and her family's experience. Her journey through grief is what we are going to talk about today. So thank you. Thank you so much for being with me.
Happy to be here.
The first thing I really want to talk about is Lizzie. And can you just give us a little window into who Lizzie is?
She's the oldest of six children. So she had a bit of a bossy streak, you could say. I mean, I think that is necessary in oldest children. She was just full of life. She loved God. She loved her family. She loved playing with her siblings and making up stories. And she loved music. She played the flute. She loved to laugh and all the stupid dad jokes. Like, she loved them. She would collect jokes, and the stupider the better. And she had this great laugh, and she also had a bit of a temper too. She had a a bit of a streak in her.
She sounds lovely. And this isn't the first time I've heard about Lizzie and all of your stories. She just sounds like just such a lovely person. Every mother, you know, runs these what if scenarios regarding our children in our head. You know, what if the worst happens? And then we try to come up with solutions. And I remember when we first moved to Ohio, it was my first experience with tornadoes. And I would lay in bed and I would try to figure out which child I would grab, which children I would have my oldest ones grab, you know, so that we could get down into the basement. And so we all do this for every type of scenario. But we find out sometimes that what we run in our heads isn't really what happens in reality. And so I just want to ask you, what did you used to think about grief versus what understanding about grief you have now? And how did your understanding of grief change after Lizzie died?
I think the first thing is that I didn't used to think about grief. It was never a possibility. My children were never going to die before me. On the rare occasion I did think about it, it was like with sadness and then, well, we'll know we'll see our families again. We know where we go when we die. And so it was just all these beautiful answers. And when dealing with friends who had loved ones who had passed away, it was always kind of those pat answers of like, things will get better. And, you know, I'm here for you if you need me. But I never knew what they were going through. before our daughter passed away, the closest person to me that I had ever lost was a grandparent. And that's very different. After she passed away, I really learned a lot. And probably the most important thing I learned is that all of our preconceptions about grief and about how our knowledge of where we go after we die and that our families are together forever does not, it can make it easier, but that doesn't mean that there's going to be an absence of sadness, an absence right. of tears, an absence of anger. Before, I think I thought those things when experienced in grief may have even been bad, because we know where we're going to go. So we should be happy. It's the next step in our, in our eternal progression. Mm-hmm. Going through it was very different. And I realized that grief is healing, and it's important to go through all the steps, and there's nothing wrong with the emotions connected to grief.
Yeah. That's right. And I love when we talk, you've claimed the first hug, that when it's your time to go to the other side, you claimed the first hug.
That's right. I'm going to have eyes for one person and one person only, and there's going to be a full-on run.
That's right. That's right. That's beautiful. And I think that's such an important point to note, that even if we do have longer picture when it comes to death, that death isn't the end, that it's okay if that's not your most comforting thought. Mm-hmm. It's okay being sad and being angry and all those emotions, you know, just come with it.
The knowledge is comforting and it helps a lot to cope, but it doesn't mean that there's going to be an absence of emotion. And it takes time. And I think that was probably one of the other things. I never thought about how long the process of grief would take. Mm-hmm. And that is different for each person in our own family, it's different. Mm-hmm. And having patience with each other as we all grieve in our separate ways. I also realized that there's things that even I said before having a daughter pass away, that now I think about the fact that I probably said some of those little pat things that you say to people and I just kind of cringe, because to hear them now, I'm like, ugh. And so you learn a lot of things you learn how to be more empathetic too.
Yeah. And you know, people we always say the wrong thing. We just don't know what to say. And probably the wrong thing is different for everybody. Can you remember anything that somebody said to you that was the right thing that actually really gave you some comfort?
I think the best things that were said to me were simply, "I'm so sorry," and a hug. Mm-hmm. Hugs. I mean, hugs just convey the words that can't be said. And I much prefer, even though, I mean, I'm sort of a huggy person, sort of not, if I don't know people real well, but in those moments, that's sometimes the only way to communicate. And it's just one of those things, or just even that deep look in the eyes with the sincere, heartfelt, "I'm sorry." Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, because no one, unless they've gone through it, no one knows what you're feeling. It's absolutely impossible to know the depth of agony a person is in. And even, you know, my parents have passed away since then, and it's totally different. The grief I have from when my parents have passed has not even touched on the grief I felt when my daughter died. You think you might know, but you just don't. So the best things that I personally feel is just heartfelt, "I'm so sorry," and a hug. Mm-hmm. And there really aren't more words beyond that.
Yeah, I love that. And I think it's because we all just want to say the thing that's going to make you stop hurting. You know, in the general term, anybody who's struggling or hurting, we just, out of love, want you to not hurt, but that is not possible. You know, you would have to stop loving the person that you're grieving to stop hurting. And that's not happening. That's not going to happen. So I love that. I'm sorry, and a hug. That is great advice. And we just try to overthink it, and we just want to come up with the magic words. And the truth is, there are no magic words.
Yeah, there aren't any.
Yeah, yeah. So what are some of the difficult aspects of dealing with grief? You kind of alluded to all of your kids. Everybody has grieved in their own way. You have the day-to-day, you have family gatherings, you know, those kinds of things. How do you deal with that? Family pictures. I mean, everything that would show a spotlight on the fact that Lizzie is not there participating.
It's hard. It's really hard. One of the hardest things for me to figure out personally, and I came to really, I have an answer now, but especially in the first year or so, I hated the question, how many children do you have? I didn't know how to answer it. If I answered it truthfully and said six, they would inevitably ask. And then I felt like I was making them uncomfortable when I explained that our oldest daughter had died. If I said five, and I had a horrible experience where I did once, and that cured me of it, then I felt like I was leaving her out of my family. Like somehow she never existed, or her existence wasn't important. And she's still and a major part of our family. So questions like that, where all of a sudden you're like, I don't know how to do that. Family pictures, you mentioned, that was another big one. We went to take family pictures. And the first time I didn't have the idea, and it was really hard to do family pictures without her. And we all just made an L with our hand. And that helped some. So it felt like she was included, but I couldn't bear to put any of the family pictures up on the wall because she wasn't in them. So the next time we did family pictures, we decided to include her by taking her last portrait we had done and holding it in our hands in the photo. And now anytime we have family pictures done, we just make sure we bring her with us. And that helps a lot, but we had to rethink that. And it took some time to kind of figure out how can we do this so that she still feels included and part of the family. A lot of just little things from the day to day where all of a sudden it's like, you know, there's a person missing. You sit down at dinner and you're used to setting eight spots around the table, and all of a sudden there's that eighth spot and everyone's just staring at it and crying because it's a reminder that the person we love so much is no longer with us.
Yeah. 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 In talking to a few women who have lost children, the universal concern, and I think it's just so amazing that you said this, is how do I answer the question of how many children? I had a friend whose child died, and she wouldn't leave the house for fear somebody would ask her how many children she had. How do you answer that question now? How did you do that?
I have a story. I had taken my five children to the dentist. And as I was checking in, the dentist asked, you know, five, just, you know, the five kids. And I'm like, yep, you know, because I had the five kids there. Right. And me too. So while my kids are being taken care of, I had, you know, the older ones keeping an eye on the little ones when they pulled me back to clean my teeth, and the hygienist said something along the lines, oh, you have five kids. And I said, yes, because at that point I'm like, well, if I say I have six, then it's going to create this awkward thing. And she's got her hands in my mouth and everything. And so she's like, okay. And I was already feeling guilty by just saying that, but I was like, let's just roll with it. And it probably won't be a big deal. And so she's like, oh, that's awesome. So what are their names and ages, you know, or how old are they? And I paused and I'm like, well, I guess I have to start with my second oldest. And so I did, and I listed out their ages, and I felt even worse. And then and this is just normal. There's no way that she knew what was going on in my life. This is normal conversation that would be totally fine at any other time. And she goes in for the question, not going for that sixth one, huh? And my heart just broke. And it was all I could do at that point. I couldn't say a word. I think I just shook my head I couldn't say anything that we already had six because I didn't want to make her feel bad. You know, she didn't know.
Right.
Managed to get out of the dentist office, not quite sure how, without bursting into tears, got all the kids in the car and sat and cried.
Mm.
And in that moment, I called my husband and I said, number one, I think I realized how Peter felt when he denied the Christ three times, because I felt like I had just done that to my daughter, Elizabeth. Hmm. And I said, number two, we have six kids. No matter what, no matter how uncomfortable it might make someone feel when we explain that one of them died, we have six.
Mm-hmm.
And that is my answer every single time. And it's going to be different for different people. And because that's my answer, it doesn't mean that someone else. And if you ask our children have different answers. I remember the day our second oldest living, came up to me and she said, Mom, is it terrible if I say I only have four siblings? And I'm like, no, sweetie, that's the best answer for you, because you don't want to necessarily always go back and explain. And I understand that. And so a lot of my children say that they have four siblings instead of five, simply because it's harder to explain to peers when you're a kid. And so that answer is going to be different for everyone. But anytime I personally am asked, or my husband, six kids, hands down, not going through that again, ever.
That is just heartbreaking. And I think this is why that question is such a worry. It puts you into such a vulnerability that now you're going to have to open that wound up again, and yet you don't want to leave them out. And this friend that I spoke about that was having a hard time leaving the house, her fear was that her child would be forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk about them, you want to say their name, you want people to ask about them. But I think it's very awkward for people to figure that out. They think, oh no, we just won't say anything. So instead of saying, oh really, tell me about your daughter. Now that they're, oh, I'm so sorry I said anything.
Yeah.
But I think we need to talk about on both sides of it. If somebody tells us that they've lost a child or a sibling, to continue that conversation for them. You know, my great aunt, she lost her son when he was two years old. He ran out into the street and was hit by a car. They buried him. They never spoke of him again, ever. And it's hard to even find a picture of him. Things were destroyed. And I think we need to think about those people that we love that are gone. And so anyway, I think that you talked about that, because I think that's a very universal
opportunity to talk about a loved one is so important. I think going back to the question you had asked previously, what is something right that someone did say?
Yes.
I do have a friend, and we messaged back and forth on Facebook. And at one point she shot me a message and she's like, if you feel like it and when you're ready, what was Lizzie's favorite color? Or what was Lizzie's favorite game to play? And she would ask questions, and she knew that if I wasn't comfortable, I'd leave it be. But she recognized something that a lot of us don't recognize, is that need to share and talk about our loved ones who have passed on. And that, once you kind of get further into the grief process, that besides the initial, I'm so sorry, and a great big hug, asking them about their child or sharing a memory. Some of the most wonderful moments, I remember when there is a young lady in our ward that just barely, and it's been almost 11 years, Christmas time, she was packing up some things in her room and she found something that my daughter had given her. And she took a picture and sent it to me. She's like, I just found this. Lizzie made these for me. And it just warmed my heart. And I was like, she's remembered 11 years later. And of course, as a family, we remember her. Mm-hmm. But it's nice to know that other people remember her and think of her.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, well, we're crying now, so this is not... And that's okay. Tears are good. I lost a childhood friend, and my mother and his mother were good friends. And she asked her, you know, how are you doing? And she said, you know, I just cry. I cry all the time. And my mom just said, yeah, I mean, just that's what you do. And that's okay. It seems like at the beginning of an event, everyone is trying to just get through the day, right? But at some point, normalcy intrudes and the day-to-day life makes its demands. And I think it is at this point that we notice some changes, you know, changes in relationships and family dynamics. For you, your pecking order is different. People's relationships with each other can change. Family feels different. I think sometimes guilt comes up, you know, that fight they had with Lizzie 2 days ago is going to haunt them, you know, that whatever that is. And what are some of the changes that your family went through? And what have you done and probably are still doing even 11 years later, restore the stability in the day to day?
I think more than restoring, it's more finding a new stability, because you can't go back to what it was before. And so you have to figure out how to with your missing wheel. And how to still drive in a fairly straight, you know, let's say you have a car and you lose a wheel, you have to figure out how to still manage to make that car go in a fairly straight line. It gets a little wobbly at times. With that missing wheel. And yeah, you mentioned our pecking order was different. Our second oldest was now technically our oldest. That's a hard role to step into. It's not a role that is easy to do if you're not born to it. And she felt a lot of responsibility and had a really hard struggle with it. She also was struggling with major trauma and all sorts of things. So we had to work on counseling with her, making sure that she was mentally healthy and that she wasn't taking on too many of the responsibilities. But at the same time, as a family of still 5 living children, we needed her help a lot in order to keep an eye on the little ones and to help with just different day-to-day things. Chores changed. That was, you know, all of a sudden, one of our main chore helpers, we had to reassign everything, remake the chore board, you know, our family home evening board that had the assignments on it. You know, what do we do with Lizzie? Do we leave her on there? Are we going to cry every time we look at it? Right, you know, are we going to cry if we look at it and she's not there? All those little things that you look at. Some of the things that we've done to help balance things out are we've tried to continue to include her in things where possible. So one example is during family scripture, our son, he was probably 7 at the time, we were reading scriptures and he was, of course, missing his oldest sister. And he's like, can we read a verse, like a Lizzie verse, just where we all read it together and we'll read it for her. And we're like, yeah, we can do that. So every time we do family scriptures, even this many years later, one of us, and it's usually a short one because long verses are hard to read in unison.
Yeah.
You know, one of us will be like, Lizzie verse, and we'll just recite that verse of scripture together as a family. And it's a way to include her and to help her feel still a part of our lives. Some of the things that, you know, we try to talk about her a lot. We want the kids to feel like she's still part of the family, but not to the point where they feel like we think more of her than we do of them. So trying to find that balance of how much to include her. And that's going to look different for every family. But for us, talking about her, sharing pictures, sharing stories, some new traditions were created. Some old traditions have continued that she started. You know, we still put her stocking up every Christmas. I couldn't that first Christmas. I could not put it up. And so we started a tradition where we do acts of service and we put the acts of service in our stocking and we read through them on Christmas Day. And we have people that share and pass them in. And so just little things like that. And then just learning from things that we wish we had done or are glad we did. before she passed away. So when the kids have come and talked to me and been like, oh, I'm, you know, I got in a fight, like you mentioned, that has come up. I got in a fight just before Lizzie passed away. And we talked about it, like, that's normal. And it's okay. And what are some of the positive things that you can remember from time that you spent with Lizzie rather than focusing on that one fight before she passed away? So helping them learn to focus. And then we had some really little ones. Our son, well, our youngest was only 18 months when she passed away. And our next oldest was only 4. So, well, I guess our next to youngest anyway, child number 5.
Yes.
And I remember he was on my lap at one point. I was reading him a story and he looks at me and he said, well, mommy, what if you die? And we couldn't give that pat answer anymore of, oh, well, that's not going to happen. Or, oh, everything will be okay, because right. He knows different, right? His sister passed away and is never coming home. And so it was a wonderful teaching moment of, you know, how we can have faith and, you know, God would take care of you and things would work out just how we've been taken care of since Elizabeth passed away. But all of a sudden you do have to kind of change your shift in how you answer questions. And I don't know how we would have helped the family navigate through all of this if it weren't for the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you know, I think sibling grief, you know, everybody, when a child dies, it's not a natural occurrence. You know, our children are not supposed to die before us. And so everybody, how's the mother? How's the father? But sibling grief is something sometimes doesn't get the attention or the, yeah. I don't know what word to use. But it is a real and deep grief to lose a sibling.
It is.
Yeah.
One of the things we had available to our family that I am so grateful for, and I wish that there were more organizations and opportunities like this around the world for grieving families. It's an organization called Fernside, and it's a center for grieving children. And we had the opportunity to take our kids, and they had them divided into age groups, and they give them the opportunity to talk about their grief. They do art projects and other things to help remember their grief. And they taught us a lot about how to grieve in a healthy way, how to make a plan on the really difficult days. And they said, even if the plan's a plan to do nothing, then, you know, and while the kids were in their meetings with their, you know, in their age groups, the adults had an opportunity to meet together as well and to talk through different topics and things about grief. We attended specifically sessions that were for the children to grieve a loss of a sibling. And they had other meetings for those that had parents and things like that, that they had to work through. That was such a valuable tool for our family to be able to have. And I wish that were available to more people.
Yeah.
There's something beautiful in this area where we live that is available. It really helped.
Well, I'll put in the show notes. I'll do a little bit of research and maybe put a few into the show notes.
That'd be awesome.
If I can find some. Yeah. Because that really is a wonderful, what a wonderful thing to be able to do and help the process.
Yeah. There's so many opportunities. There's so many grief. I don't know what to call them, but grief organization helping, the majority of them are geared to helping adults cope with the loss of a child but helping adults, and not enough, I think, focus on helping children. Mm-hmm. And I think, there's a lot of times when, you know, people have asked, well, how are you doing? I'm like, I'm great. And they don't always ask about the kids. And it's they're struggling. I think it's more, I mean, they don't have all the tools we have as adults. So,
right. And as a parent, both you and your husband, you're dealing with your own grief, but you're also having to help your children with sibling grief.
Yes.
With grieving their sibling, and that you could go to a place that could help you even with that is wonderful. And so it's just, it is very, there's a lot of layers, a mm-hmm. lot of layers. And I think that that would be very, very challenging as a parent, and so important to acknowledge the grief that siblings have. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think there's a tighter relationship we have in our lives than that with our siblings. We fight, we make up, we love, you know,
yeah.
We defend, you know, we, our family is a say, you know, we can say anything we want to about each other, but nobody else better, you know?
Yeah.
We will take up the cause for our sibling. Even if we agree with what you said, you know, maybe they were being a little stinker, but we'll never admit it. And you don't get to say it.
Yep, so that's so true.
I just think that is such a strong bond and one that needs to be acknowledged. And
yeah,
I love your comments on that. Now, your book, Toenails and Teardrops, is such a wonderful story of loss, of love, and of recovery. And I've told you this before, I would describe it as Little Women meets Anna Green Gables. It's just so wonderful. And you have the charm of those books, but you also have the realness. You portray a real family, real siblings. I have 7 children, and I'm reading the scenes in your book, and I'm like, this is so true. This is exactly how siblings react to each other and do for each other and don't do for each other and all of the antics. It is just a beautiful story, again, of loss, forgiveness, and healing weaved through a narrative in a way that just tears at your heart. And the antics and capers of these kids do also will keep you laughing. And I fell in love with your book, the first sentence you read in our critique group, and I am sure it is going to be published soon. It's a wonderful story, and it carries a beautiful spirit with it. And I think it would be a wonderful story for a family who's grieving to read. And I'm sure they will see themselves in that story and find some healing in it. To end this episode, will you tell us one thing that is in your book that was also part of Lizzie's story?
Oh, there's several. There's some funny things. There's some serious things. A couple of the funny things. There's a scene in the book where they are eating spaghetti as a family. And in the scene I wrote, I added missionaries. Now, the missionaries were not at our house the day this happened, but I kind of took 2 different aspects of Lizzie and put them together. Anyway, but in the scene, they're eating spaghetti noodles and Elizabeth goes to ask for the noodles to be passed. And she says, please pass the nudes. And of course, I write this big funny thing and it's all embarrassing and it's fabulous. Well, that is based off of a true thing. We were having dinner. Now, Elizabeth was probably only 5 at the time. And she asked to please pass the nudes. And we looked at her like, pass the what? And she's like, the nudes, the noodles. And we're like, sweetie, do you know what nudes are? And she's like, no. And we're like, they're naked people. And she's like, I don't want those. So that was one of those really funny moments. And on the more serious side, one of the scenes that is very real is the scene in the hospital. When we got to the hospital, some of the young women in our congregation found out and asked if they could come and visit her at the hospital. And so we got permission for them to come. And they, while they were there, they wanted to paint her toenails. And the nurse said that they could paint her toenails, but they needed to leave 1 toenail on each foot unpainted so that they use that to help with pulse ox and monitoring oxygen levels. And so one of the young ladies kind of was like, okay, so that's 8 toes. And there are 8 values that they strive to live by. And each of those values has a color that matches. And so they went, they got all the different colors of toenail polish, came back, they painted her toenails, they painted mine, they painted my husband's and our bishop's. And then later, as we posted and shared about it, we kept getting pictures of people all over the country, all over the world, people we didn't even know, who were painting their toenails for Elizabeth and sending us pictures in support of her. That just meant everything, everything to us in those really difficult moments. And it continued after she passed away. And she had cousins' entire youth groups painting their toenails in honor of her. And it was the sweetest, most heartfelt thing. And still to this day, when we call April 7th, we call it her angelversary. When her angelversary comes around, we all paint our toenails. We call them rainbow toes now.
You know, I've heard that story before, and it touched me then. It touches me when you've talked about it since, and it has touched me now. What a beautiful story of love. And Lizzie was loved. She lived a life full of love for sure. And I want to thank you so much for being my friend, but also for sharing Elizabeth with us today and being willing to take some space to be vulnerable in order to help others on their own journey through grief. And I don't look forward to you leaving this earth, but I think about and look forward to your first hug. And I'm sure Lizzie has also proclaimed, you know, first hug rights as well on her end. And it will be a wonderful reunion. And again, thank you for sharing with us today. I want to thank everyone for listening. I invite you to check out my website, One Mom to Another. My book, One Mom to Another, is available on Amazon. And I always appreciate it when you rate, subscribe, or leave a review for my podcast. But last of all, I want to say again, you know, women need women. We need each other. We are not alone. And please remember that if you're struggling with grief or anything else that women struggle with, please reach out. And please always remember, you are doing better than you think. Thanks again, Julia, for being here with me.
Thank you.